A podcast of the cinema.
Starring you. Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm a film reviews editor at The Wrap and co-host of the Breakfast All Day and Who Shot You podcasts, in addition to this one, of course.
Now and say my name.
Call you by your name.
Say my name.
Your name is Dave White.
That's right.
You're a film critic for The Wrap. You are married to me. We are both film critics.
This is our show.
I thought you said they weren't called lozenges anymore.
I have a lozenge. Maybe this is your first episode. It's been a whole saga. Me being sick with a cold and whatnot.
Dave's had a cold. Stop the world.
Yeah, had a cold. Still coughing. Like, it's not... It's going away. Mm-hmm. I'll go hours without doing it. And then I'll go through these, like...
Jags,
yeah. Currently, it's the afternoon, and I'm on one.
But we'll pause if it gets bad. Relax, listeners. You will not have to hear the Hall's coughing.
The Hall's honey lemon. The word lozenge appears nowhere.
What are they called now?
On the back, they don't call them anything.
Drops. Well, what's the serving size on the back? That is the rustliest package. That's like designed to mess with Broadway.
Like, it is,
what's
yeah.
the loudest bag of cough drops we can come up with?
Directions.
Patty LuPone is already yelling at you.
One drop.
Yeah.
They're called drops.
Drops.
But that's the only place even that you find the word drop is in the directions. Anyway.
Drop.
They used to call them lozenges.
Yeah, well.
I like that word better than a drop. I'll have one bag of cough lozenges, please.
Yeah, cough drop seems like a cherry Ludens that really doesn't do anything but taste so yummy.
Oh, these Halls, though, they knock it down.
Oh, yeah. No, it, for sure.
They make it way better for me.
They do your whole head, those Halls lozenges.
Yeah, there's all this eucalyptus in it.
Mm-hmm.
It turns you galaxy brain.
Could we be more old men right now than having a conversation about Hall's lozenges that are no longer called lozenges?
They're for everyone. They're for all ages. I'm just going to have them next to me every day for the rest of my life.
Apparently so. It's going to be a requirement.
Also, if this is your first episode, this is not me having a cold in the voice.
I always sound like this. And also, if this is somehow your first episode, you really should go back one and catch our roundtable discussion that we just posted yesterday.
It's very exciting.
Our annual year in review episode. We have Manola Dargis from the New York Times, Robert Avely from the LA Times and The Wrap, and Peter DeBruge from Variety. We cover a variety of subjects, including cats.
Everyone on that roundtable is almost as magnificent a film critic as me.
Oh, stop it. You are barely fit to hold Manola's lozenges.
Oh, I'm not fit to hold the lozenges. Listen, the fact that she even speaks our names, like that she knows us and says, oh, you're such lovely people, like that never fails to blow my mind. Like, oh, she likes us. Why?
She will do our stupid show.
Why? Anyway, what was that song you were singing when we were doing the mic check?
Oh, it's from Merrily We Roll Along.
You know, I thought it was Sondheim. That's what I thought. And then I thought, once it got to the part about how you would die without me, and that you would die day after day after day, I thought, that's very Sondheimian. You know, it's a thing that is literal and then figurative, like at the same time.
If you catch me singing a show tune, it is almost entirely likely to be Sondheim.
Yeah.
Unless it's some random day where I've got something from Jesus Christ Superstar stuck in my head for whatever reason.
Godspell.
Godspell, true.
Yeah.
But yeah, beyond that, it's going to be Sondheim.
Well, actually, you know what else? You cover the waterfront. Like, you walk around this house singing Dolores Gray songs and, you know.
That's true. She has that one amazing song from It's Always Fair Weather.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't launch into Rodgers and Hammerstein or, you know.
No, that's me. That's what I do.
Oh, sure, yeah. You're always with, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair.
I'm the Hills Are Alive with Sound of Music.
Yeah, true.
That's me. I'm the, you know, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. I know musical theater. I know songs.
I wish we're going to be in New York at some time, because I keep hearing about the Oklahoma that Fs, as everybody calls it.
The Oklahoma with the chili and the crock pots.
Yes.
I want to see that.
Yes.
I also want to see the OG movie, which I've never watched.
You're the one who's the nut about Shirley Jones.
I know. Everyone thinks that I don't know things about musical theater.
Just because
they think I'm just all punk rock and metal and all that stuff all the time.
Just because you lied about Stephen Sondheim to seduce me.
Sometimes you say lies, sometimes you say enticements. They're not the same thing.
They are when they are lies.
I needed to throw out something gay. And that's what I thought, what's gay and smart at the same time? And that took me hours to come to any decision on. Because there's so little that is both at the same time.
Oh, stop.
And I finally thought, aha, Sondheim. That's what the smart people like. The smart gays like Sondheim. I will reel in a smart gay with my Sondheim reference. And it worked. Well, look at that.
It did work.
Look what happened.
You're a devious cad.
I've known you for 25 years now, thanks to that bit of enticement. We won't call it a lie.
Fine.
It's an enticement. Had you hooked right from the get-go. Then you were taken in by my charms. By my ease of conversation.
Oh, yes.
By my devastating good looks.
Your devil-may-care attitude.
My freewheeling demeanor. My vacuuming. My organizational skills. The way I love to alphabetize things.
It's true. You are familiar with the alphabet.
My many to-do lists.
You got your new at-a-glance today for 2020. The year can begin.
Yeah. It took me the show. Hey, by the way, if this is your first time, we will begin talking about movies any minute.
Honest.
The year started, and that first week of the year, ain't nothing going on.
But the rent.
So you don't have to have your at-a-glance right at the jump of January.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got sick for 2 weeks. And ain't nothing was going on there either. Didn't need my at-a-glance then. Then last week when things kicked back into gear and I had to start going to screenings and doing work and recording podcasts again and writing things and stuff, I thought, oh, dang, I don't have my 2020 at-a-glance yet. So I ordered it, and it just showed up. They've redesigned it.
It's so exciting.
There's so much more room to write things down now. Like, you get all of Saturday and all of Sunday and not just a one column cut in half. You get a whole half page of notes. You get an extra page of just blank sheet for notes. I have so many notes to me. Notes to myself.
Memo to myself.
To remind myself to do things. This is going to change everything.
Okay, it's a whole new ball game.
You thought I cared about organization before 2020, but with my new 2020 at-a-glance.
Oh, it's on.
Everybody better look out.
You're going to be so organized.
Yeah. I will not have time for anybody to be less than 100% prompt.
Is there a column for shilly-shallying in there?
There's no shilly-shallying column in this. It's over for all you hoes. I heard that on the internet. I liked it. I mean, it's like 3 years old or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not fresh.
It's still good.
Okay.
The good internet expressions. Over for you hoes. The, and you know who you are. It was, I don't know if it was Glenn Weldon on Twitter. It might have been. Usually it is him.
Uh-huh.
So, someone said, am I the hoe for whom it is over? I had to ask myself. If you have to ask yourself, the answer is probably true. It's
that
probably
that sounds like it would have been narration on Sex and the City.
Yeah.
I had to ask myself, am I the hoe for whom it's over?
Yeah, I don't know who said that, but it wasn't me. Mm. We do have to talk about the current cinema.
We do. It's our kind of why we're here.
And I would like to... Ooh.
Oh, it's furniture building time again.
It's furniture building time downstairs again.
I don't know if you can hear it through the mic.
That was all day yesterday. The reason we're recording this episode today instead of yesterday afternoon was that the furniture building going on downstairs in the apartment below us was
deafening.
An all-day affair, and it was loud, and they miraculously stopped just as our guests... for the special episode, we're showing up.
Well, they knew Manolo was here.
So exactly.
Oh, came
no.
Correct.
Oh, no. Do not cross her. So, anyway, we didn't do this yesterday because we were waiting for the banging to stop.
So if you hear a thunk, thunk, thunk in the background, that's
what
that is.
Building furniture still, I guess. That's okay.
They're either building furniture or they're trapping somebody in a wall with a cask of Amontillado. I can't.
Well,
decide.
You know, The Boy 2 is coming out soon.
Oh, that's true.
So, you never know. That's what happens in Boy. Or not Boy, but The Boy.
Yes.
They find out some dude's living in the walls like Bad Ronald.
Mm.
Spoiler. Don't let that stop you from watching The Boy, though. It's so good. No. Here's the film I think we need to start with first.
Okay.
Atlantics.
Oh, all right.
The
sure.
reason being,
yes.
It's the one that it has been available for the longest amount of time.
And we just haven't gotten to it yet.
And we just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yes.
It is currently on Netflix.
Yes, you can see it.
Yeah. It it won the grand prize at Cannes
mm-hmm.
in
2019.
Yeah, early 2019, or May 2019, I guess, yeah. When the camera. And when it won, and I learned what it was, I immediately, my tingling senses, you know, jumped up, because the filmmaker is Matty Diop. Now, this is her first...
feature?
This is her first feature. And at least I think it's her first feature. Anyway, she is, for me, known for two reasons. She is the niece of the legendary Senegalese filmmaker Djibril Diop Mambéty,
mm-hmm.
whose name I'm sure I just killed.
Probably.
Anyway, he made... an important film in the early 1970s called Tuki Buki. You can see it right now on the Criterion Channel.
It's part of like the Martin Scorsese World Cinema
Martin
Collection
Scorsese Presents World Cinema, something like that. I urge everybody who has the Criterion Channel or access to this film in some way or another, watch it.
T-O-U-K-I-B-O-U-K-I.
Yeah, Tuki Buki. It's about a young Senegalese couple in love and on the run. And what happens to them. And so Matty Diop is Jibril Diop Mambeti's niece.
Okay.
She's also, her father's a famous musician that I confess I did not know about until recently. All I knew was that she was the niece of this famous filmmaker.
Right.
Another thing that Mati Diop is known for me, is that she's the star of Claire Denis' film 35 Drops of Rum.
Shots.
What did I say?
Drops.
Oh, I've got You're drops in my brain.
With the lozenges.
Lozenges in my mouth. 35 Shots of Rum.
Yes.
S-H-O-T-S.
Yes.
35 Shots of Rum. A wonderful, beautiful, quiet, gentle, lovely film from Claire Denis. So now she's a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And the film is, the French title is Atlantique.
Yeah.
Why they have chosen to call it Atlantics for the English language market is mysterious to me.
Well, we don't know that she wasn't involved with that, so it
she
could
might
be
have been.
Intentional.
Maybe she chose that.
It but could I mean, be. Atlantique might, and it might
Atlantique
also,
is easy to pronounce.
Right, but it might be some turn of phrase that, you know, doesn't translate exactly, you know, in the way that La Grande Illusion actually means the great illusion and not grand illusion, as we've called it for years.
All right.
You know, I don't know. Maybe there's some vagary of French that we're not aware of. Anyway, but yeah,
perhaps.
It's Atlantics in English.
Anyway, it got a very limited theatrical release.
Yes.
And then went very quickly after that to right. Netflix.
Well, Netflix picked it up at Cannes.
And, yeah, Netflix you know, bought it.
They gave it kind of an awards
They
run,
gave it an awards situation. Yeah. Yeah. Is it one of the foreign language films for the Academy Awards?
I
don't think it
don't
is,
think
is it?
I think it is.
Well, it
no,
should
it's,
be.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not
it ought to be.
I just put through, by the way, if you go to the wrap today, friend of the show, Bibbs, William Bibbiani, did a ranking of all 38 feature films, documentary and narrative and foreign and animated and everything, that are currently nominated for Academy Awards.
Do you know why Atlantique / Atlantics mm-hmm. is historically important?
Is it like the first? It's not the first film from a black woman to be in competition in Cannes.
That is correct.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
In 2019?
Uh-huh.
Oof.
That's right.
Get it together, Cannes.
Okay, so here's what it's about. Well, they got it together and they gave it the grand prize. They gave it the Grand Prix.
I know, but I did that. That's late. I'm sorry.
Well, no. Yes, we know. We acknowledge that it is.
That's what I was saying.
Extremely late. Okay, so here's what it's about. So there's an office tower being built.
Yes.
And a bunch of young men working on the office tower. And these young men have not been paid.
For months.
For months for their work. And they protest to the bosses. The bosses are like, eh.
Yeah.
So all of them just quit. And they get on a boat in the night. And they go to Spain. They head for Spain, where
yes.
things might be better.
Yes.
One of the guys on the boat is this young dude named Suleiman. And he's got a girlfriend named Ada.
She is betrothed to a rich dude.
Yes. Ada is scheduled to marry a guy named Omar, who's got a lot of money.
Right, yes.
But she loves Suleiman.
Yeah.
And she has a delightful group of friends who are evenly divided right down the middle. Like half of them are good, devout Muslim young women.
Yes.
And the others like to party.
Yes.
And the
devout Muslims like to refer to the other women as sluts.
The sluts.
The
like
sluts,
they're a
yeah.
group. Yeah. And there's this constant sort of like
tug of war.
Oh, well, your other friends, blah, blah, blah. Well, if you would just behave,
yeah,
you know, bad things wouldn't happen to you. But she loves Suleiman. She knows she has to marry Omar, but she loves Suleiman. And she's distraught that he has left on this boat. And he didn't even tell her goodbye.
Right. So then on Ada and Omar's wedding night,
Their wedding bed catches on fire.
Yeah, someone sets their bed on fire.
And an investigation begins.
Yes.
An arson investigation begins. And there's a detective who is sort of like a young, you know, hothead.
Yeah.
And he wants to
bust Suleiman
for doing it.
Who he's convinced either didn't leave or came back secretly.
Just to ruin the wedding and set the bed on fire.
Right.
Yeah. And he's convinced that Ada knows something, so he's constantly interrogating her and locking her up and stuff.
Following her
around. Meanwhile, everyone's getting sick, and we don't know why. The detective's getting sick. The young female friends are getting sick. And then it gets even weirder.
Yeah.
That all the young women.
How much are you going to tell?
I'm going to tell enough.
Okay.
Yeah. All of the young women wander around at night like zombies.
Yeah.
And what you come to realize, what you come to understand, is that all the young women are possessed at night by the spirits of the young men who left who left on the boat and were lost at sea and died.
Yeah.
Then Suleiman shows up again. And we don't know how. And we don't know why. And we don't know why the detective is getting sick. And I won't tell you anything more. But it's a weird, really weird ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
Love story. Protest about, you know, capitalism. It has a lot in common with Tuki Buki.
Really?
It's energy. Although this is a much more, what's the right word, somnambulant sort of film than Tuki Buki. Tuki Buki is very sort of like, go, 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 go. And this one is
languid,
dreamy and quiet and strange and spooky.
Yeah.
It also has a lot in common with some of the more... critique of colonialism films from Claire Denis.
Yeah.
So they're clearly like tight in some way. Sure. I know that Maddie Diop grew up in France. Her mother's in the art world. Like I said, her father's a famous musician. Mm. And so somehow the crossing paths with Claire Denis. Mm. But there's some of this thing with Claire Denis about, you know, the dispossessed coming back.
Hmm.
And that is something that takes place in this film as well. So there's so much influence and reference going on here. But at the same time, this is clearly all her vision. You know, this is her story. And I haven't been this impressed by a first-time feature, and I'm going to keep saying that this is a first-time feature, even though I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, we paused the recording so I could go get my facts straight. And I was right. She made some short films and a couple short documentaries and a short film called Atlantiques.
Yes, in 2009.
Which is sort of, I think, what this is based on.
Yeah, it's the same.
Anyway. She's cool.
This is a very cool movie.
And I really highly recommend this.
Yeah.
It's one of the it's one of the best things I saw from 2019 that I've seen. Mm. I want more from Matthew Diop.
And it has the same cinematographer as Portrait of a Woman on Fire.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Also, Stranger by the Lake and the follow-up The Stranger by the Lake, Staying Vertical.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. Her name. Let's get her name.
Yes, we should.
I'm pulling it down.
I saw her accept the LAFCA award. Claire Mathon.
Yeah. Look out for her.
Yeah, she's happening.
Cool cinematographer.
Because
this movie's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. We'll be talking about that in February when it opens.
Yes, we will.
Anyway, Atlantiques. Please do go to Netflix and give yourself a treat. An unsettling treat.
Yes, yeah, but it's lovely.
Yeah. All right, now, speaking of France, although she's a French filmmaker, but this film is all shot in Senegal.
Right.
And it's in the Wolof language?
I don't know.
I think that's what I read. It's a language that's spoken there.
Right.
So,
are you segueing us to Les Miserables?
Yeah, which I did not see yet.
Oh, okay, because a lot of that film is shot in the language of Mali.
I did not know that.
Which is where the director is from, and a lot of the characters as well, because it is
It's set in Paris.
It is set in Paris. Right, it is not an adaptation of the Victor Hugo novel, but it is set in...
They reference it,
though. It is referenced. It is set in the neighborhood where he wrote the novel. Mm. And I believe the film is bookended with quotes from Victor Hugo.
Okay.
So they're sort of using, you know... What's happening in contemporary France is a way to comment upon...
It's lozenge talk.
Okay. What's always seems to be happening in contemporary France. It is structured a lot like, you know, Training Day, Do the Right Thing. It's a one day in the life of, and a lot of stuff happens.
Yeah.
But like a new guy becomes, is transferred to Paris to the police force. He is assigned to patrol with these partners, one white, one black, who are in the banlieue, I guess, sort of the outlying neighborhoods, where they are dealing with the population is mostly African Muslim.
Okay.
And over the course of a day, like, minor things happen, major things happen, but a lot of like turns occur where we wind up at, you know, a very volatile place. A kid gets shot with like a sort of kind of a riot gun, you know, the sort of like impact rifles they use, you know, they shoot like beanbags or whatever.
Oh.
The cops use.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's the thing about like European films, like no one ever has a gun, you know, or few people have a gun, you know. And so it's sort of like all the events of the course of this day that bring us to this like sort of tragic, you know, like here, this is where riots come from. You
right.
Know? And it's, you know, it's interesting. And you know, they specifically reference the 2005 riots in France.
Yes.
And both, you know, in one way, they sort of kind of illustrate like this is where these events come from. And this is why for certain, you know, strata of the populace, this is the one way they have to sort of express their anger, to express their dissatisfaction with the system, while at the same time acknowledging this isn't ultimately going to make any giant change in the way these people live.
Right.
You know, the weird thing about talking about this film now, though, in context, is that it is the movie that France put up for the Oscars instead of Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yes.
And it paid off. They got a nomination for it. It is currently up.
Yeah.
But come on. It is not Portrait of a Lady on Fire. But it's still interesting, and it's definitely, you know, worth a look.
The snippets of it that I saw as you were watching the screener here. I think because of those little chunks that I saw, I think I understand why they put it up for the Academy Award. It's more urgent.
It is more socially relevant.
It's more socially relevant right now. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is sort of classically French.
Sure.
In that it's a period film. You know, it's about repression.
Mm-hmm.
And it is equally contemporary if you are seeing it with the right set of eyes.
Sure.
But that's, let's be real, that's not what the Academy looks at.
No.
They're not good at...
Well, it's also, I mean...
Taking something like Portrait of a Lady on Fire and saying, ah, yes, contemporary women's issues are here and now, right now and here.
Right, well, although we can't really pin that on the Academy because the country picks.
I understand that.
France decided.
But you don't think France doesn't know at this point...
What plays and
what
doesn't.
Plays over here That's, with the Academy.
That is probably a fair cop, yes.
So this is, you know, a ripped from the headlines kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to, you know, appeal to the voting membership.
Yeah, Lodge Lee is the director. I mean, let's face it, everybody in the foreign category this year is going to lose to Parasite. And they, you know...
Do we think that Parasite will take Best International, or will it take Best Picture?
History suggests that it will win Best International, and because of that, not Best Picture. There is a growing chorus of people wondering if it might win both.
It could.
Which is already annoying people that I want to be annoyed, so that's making me happy.
Who's going to be annoyed by that?
Your least favorite internet film columnist.
Jeffrey Wells?
Yes.
Screw that guy. Say his name out loud. He's a jerk.
He is already upset about the idea that Parasite could win both.
Good.
Yeah. I'm enjoying that. But yeah, no, it could. Anything could happen. I'm a terrible Oscar prognosticator. But no, logically, this is...
Oh, I never pick the right anything. Don't ask me what's going to win.
This is his...
I would like Parasite to take Best Picture.
That would be great. I would have no
problem. Is Pain and Glory nominated for Best International?
For International, yes.
Well, then that should have that.
Well, that would be nice. That's,
Pain and Glory is so beautiful.
That's what LAFCA did. We gave Parasite Best Picture and we gave Pain and Glory International.
Yeah.
This is also Lodge Lee's first feature. It also premiered at Cannes last year. And yeah, I think it's really, it is well done. I've seen people sort of kind of try to poo-poo it because it's not Do the Right Thing. But I mean, like, it is and it isn't.
It's not going to be Do the Right Thing. It's going to be its own thing.
Exactly. It's something separate. Although there's a definite indebtedness, I would say.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. But I did feel like I was seeing parts of contemporary France that I get to see in a lot of movies. Because you don't just get like the Muslim population. There's also a whole subplot regarding a circus run by the Roma,
yeah.
You know, that keys into the plot as well. You know, you get a bit of the home life of these cops,
yeah.
That sort of puts a little light on where they're coming from and what they're about.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting film. People should check it out.
And then there's Underwater.
Yes, there is.
Oh my. Underwater. Who made Underwater? William Eubank. Do I know who that is?
No idea.
What has that person done?
Some guy.
William Eubank. More known for being a cinematographer. He made The Signal. Do I know what that is?
That one?
Yeah. I saw that.
Okay. Yeah. Forgot about it until just now.
Anyway, Underwater is set underwater.
Go figure.
At the bottom of the Marianas Trench.
Yes. Down.
7 miles down at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. At the bottom of the ocean.
Can people go down there in any real way?
For real, I don't know. I don't know if anybody
can research submarines go down there.
Probably. I don't know that you could create like living quarters and, you know,
right.
have machines down there.
Anyway, this is a movie about fracking. There's a drill site at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And all the people who work for the drilling company, they're down there. And within 20 seconds of the beginning of this film, everything starts to collapse. And everyone starts to die. And Kristen Stewart, in her underpants, runs and runs and runs and runs and runs.
Here's the thing, though. Like, one thing that kind of bugged me about this movie.
Hang on. We're still talking about what happens.
Well, I know, but okay, fine.
So many things happen. Don't talk about what bugs you yet until I tell people about what happens.
Okay.
There are survivors. And they all get in a in a group and run around and run around and run around. And then they get in super claustrophobic, tight spaces that will freak you out. And then they put on underwater pressure suits, and they go out and they walk in the pitch black because there's no light down there. And they have to get to the facility that isn't destroyed,
where there are escape pods.
Mm-hmm. But before they can get to that, there are monsters that jump out at you.
Yes.
Jump scares that got me twice.
That is, I'm still shocked. I wish I'd been there.
Jump scares that got me twice. I went, both times.
Is that because you have the theater yourself, so you don't have to be cool for anybody? Or
I did have the theater all to myself. It's fantastic. 5 o'clock on a weekday afternoon at the Grove. Ain't nobody there. It's January. Got my macaron at La Durée. Cup of tea.
You're welcome.
Oh, no, thank you very much. You guys, my husband gave me a La Durée gift card in my Christmas stock.
That's right.
Worth 25 whole dollars.
Mm-hmm. Which is good for, what, 3 cookies?
Then? I spent $16 on a cup of tea and a handful of macaron. Each one more delicious than the last.
Oh, good.
I waltzed right into the Grove and I said, here are my French pastries that you people don't sell at your concession stand. I'll be bringing these inside. I didn't do that at all. I actually had a bag of groceries from Monsieur Marcel.
Ah.
And when I walked in, the guy goes, what's in that bag? I go, groceries. He goes, you have outside food. I go, these are Borlotti beans and they're dry.
I'm not going to chug this bottle of olive oil.
That's correct. So anyway, there's not one original thing going on in this film.
No.
Why don't you talk about your whatever it is you want to talk about?
Well, no, I did have fun with this, and it does work very much on kind of a dopey B movie level. But they dangle something interesting at you that they then never bother to follow up on, which is in that 20 seconds or so of narration that Kristen Stewart gets at the beginning of the movie before everything goes, you know, kerfluffy.
Haywire, yeah.
She talks about how, you know, when you're at the bottom of the ocean and you don't see the sun, like, you know, you lose track of when you're asleep, when you're awake, and when you're dreaming, and when you're not dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, oh, like at some point, all this chaos is going to reveal itself to just be like a nightmare she's having, or like she thinks at some point maybe that she does a thing that's going to save her and then realizes that no, she just dreamt that it didn't really happen. No, they never touch on the whole you can't tell if you're dreaming or not thing ever again in the movie. They just sort
you
of
are
they,
right.
They say it and then
they
it's,
may have shot forgotten. Something and decided it was too oblique and complicated and dropped it.
This is like what, 85 minutes?
It's not a long film.
Yeah, this is lean, and which to me suggests that like a lot of stuff got chopped out of it.
Possibly.
But that's to the movie's favor, because like if you're going to be a straight up, you know, like pure genre B movie that's borrowed all of its cool ideas from somewhere else, you might as well be short.
Yeah.
Be 76 minutes. Who cares?
Let me tell you something. I don't even care that they didn't follow through on that narration.
Okay, fine.
This movie hits the ground, and it's like, go, 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 and does not let up.
True. The other thing, though, is also, which is weird given that the director came up as a cinematographer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times in this movie where you can't tell what's going on.
Oh, it's like, absolutely disorienting.
There are so many close-ups
mm-hmm.
of people in the murk,
yep.
you know? And yep. then, like, even once the monsters half the time, like, I wasn't entirely sure how big they were because they're in such darkness. I didn't have a sense of scale all the
you
time.
You know how big they are. They start off small.
Yeah.
And then they get bigger.
Yes.
Yeah. And so That sense of not knowing where you are only upped the tension and freak out for me, because I sat there thinking to myself, okay, very much like in the Poseidon Adventure.
How do I save myself?
How do I survive this? And the answer was, I do not. I explode from the water pressure because I forgot to screw on my helmet right or something. Like, and my head just turns into like liquid. Yeah. There is so much for me, so much like palpable, panicky, claustrophobic fear in this movie that I believe that it was perhaps intentional to make the physical space disorienting. Like, how did they get into this weird little crevice that they can't get out of? How is it connected to the plant that they're in? Like, how far do they have to walk to get from the one place to the other in the pitch blackness, only illuminated by monsters that glow in the dark? How do you find these escape pods in a place you've never been? Like, it spins you around and puts a blindfold on you. And I think that was maybe intentional.
Okay. I will say Kristen Stewart commits.
Oh my God.
Like, you know, I'm a huge fan of her.
She's serious. She's taking it seriously.
But she is totally, yeah.
In her underpants, the whole movie.
She's rippling as hard as
tough
she can.
And sexy and just all in on this. I had such a good time.
I said on Twitter, I really want somebody to do an essay comparing her homage to Sigourney Weaver's Ripley compared to Amy Sedaris is on The Mandalorian.
Yeah. She got her Gene Seberg hair
mm-hmm.
in this, because that's coming out like in an official way soon, right?
I don't know what the deal is.
I thought it opened in December.
It had an awards run, but yeah, I don't know if it has like an actual release still on the horizon or not or what.
I saw the poster up at the Arclight last week.
Well, maybe then it's
maybe something supposed to be.
Maybe
happening.
It hasn't shown up for real yet.
But. Yeah. Anyway, so Underwater, you guys, go see Underwater. It is dope. All right. Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah. No. What I said on Breakfast All Day is like, this is a well done movie that is not for me.
Well, first of all,
partially because I didn't see Bad Boys or Bad Boys 2. So right. I'm coming in late on this.
The first two Bad Boys, then let me explain.
Please, right. Dave, explain to me.
This is now the 25th year of the Bad Boys story. The first film came out in 95.
Wow.
But these guys were young, young, young. Mm. Martin was Martin on television at that time.
Yep.
Will Smith was just finishing up being the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, this was pre-Independence Day.
Yeah. And Michael Bay took them and shook them. And made two extremely popular and utterly incomprehensible films that I thoroughly enjoyed both times. In spite of A, their casual homophobia, and B, their casual relationship to reality on any level ever. As I said on KCRW this past week, this new version, this new update from not Michael Bay, but Adil and Bilal, the filmmaking team.
Yeah, they're Belgian.
This is a movie where if the characters are driving in a car chase and they look in their rearview mirror, you won't see a shark chasing them like you might in the Michael Bay versions. You will see maybe other cars chasing them instead. But it's kind of like when Michael Bay made the Pearl Harbor movie and Ben Affleck gets on the train and goes to England.
Yes.
That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. That's the kind of filmmaker Michael Bay is.
Right.
This one is the most coherent and well-organized of the Bad Boys films. They have dispensed with the homophobia.
Hooray.
Which I think, I have a theory.
Yes.
I think Will Smith's kids
mm-hmm.
are really leading him into the future.
I hope so.
I really think that's true. I mean, because you look at the podcast that Jada does with Willow and like Jada's mom.
Mm.
And these are progressive folks. And I think the kids are like, hey, Dad, we watched your old movies.
Knock it off.
You have to not have that in your next one at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a whole lot of other personal theories about the Smiths, but
let's not.
But I'll keep those to myself. They, but I think they're an unusual family.
Mm-hmm.
I think Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith have an unusual relationship, and their kids are certainly so cool. Like both those kids mm-hmm. are really cool, and I think they influence their parents.
For me, the most interesting thing about this movie is a spoiler, and so I'm loath to talk about it right now. But if you want to go listen to the Breakfast All Day episode,
what is the spoiler? Can you talk around it? Which one are you talking about?
There's a spoiler regarding who one character winds up being.
Oh, okay. All right. So anyway. Yeah, I guess that is technically a spoiler.
So I can't get into that, but I think it ties into some other recent films in an interesting way. I go into detail about that on Breakfast All Day if you want to go hear that episode, so I'm not going to spoil it.
But here's the story of this one.
Okay, fine.
Martin Lawrence wants to retire, be a grandfather. Will Smith does not want to retire. But, you know, this cartel is murdering people and tries to murder Will Smith. And
cartel's murdering all these like really powerful law enforcement people, and nobody seems to like
be able to stop them.
Or like up their security or anything.
The only people who can stop them are the bad boys.
Uh huh.
And so
the grumpy old bad boys.
The grumpy old bad boys. And so they drive around in fast cars and they shoot at people until they get the job done. And they have some help, a new group, an organization. An organization called AMMO, which stands for
Advanced
Artillery
Something Miami
Machines
something.
Miami Oranges. Yeah,
yeah.
And they've got a woman whose name I'm blanking on, but she was on this past season of The Purge,
right?
And she plays kind of a love interest for Will Smith.
Yes,
and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name. Vanessa Hudgens is on the team.
Alexander Ludwig,
who I thought I knew him from other stuff, but he just looks like a tall blonde Frankenstein.
I've seen him in other stuff.
And then the guy who was Reggie on
the first
Riverdale.
Reggie, yeah. Hang on, I'm looking at everybody.
I forget his name too. Sorry. Anyway, this is a completely competent
Charles Melton is first Charles Reggie Melton. And Paula Nunez.
Paula Nunez.
Yes.
Okay. This is absolutely competent. Fun 90s-ish, you know, sort of throwback movie. It looks cool. It's very flashy.
They're doing that thing like that Expendables movie where they throw in a bunch of young people so you can tell, like, if this goes, we can spin off with them.
Like a Fast and the Furious kind of thing.
Yeah, because these codgers are, you know, getting too old for this nonsense.
Well, it goes because it not only is it fun to watch and entertaining and full of brutal violence. It also made a gang of money this weekend.
It did.
Yeah. And Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, they are having a good time together. They don't seem old and creaky, although Martin Lawrence is playing old and creaky.
Mm-hmm. The material is, but, you know.
The material, listen, this is not a film about humanity. It's a film about hardware. And in spite of the fact that it wants to give you some emotional stuff toward the last chunk of the film,
mm-hmm.
it can't because it has already destroyed a lot of human beings along the way,
right?
With very little emotional fallout from anyone on the cast, including the people who are allegedly very close to the people who get killed.
Yeah,
so it's weird in that it doesn't account for that. on a human level, but you know what? That's not what these films are about.
It just, to me, it reminded me, it's, you know, this franchise has been around for so long that Don Simpson's name is still in the credits.
Right.
And he's been dead for like 20 years.
Yes.
But yeah, this is still a Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer joint. And it just took me back to all the soulless Jerry Bruckheimer movies of the 80s.
True.
So I was sitting there during the closing credits thinking, like, I was around for the 80s. I feel like I've seen all these movies already. And then I was like, oh, God, I was reviewing movies in the 80s. And then I was thinking, like, oh, yeah, my first, like, actually sort of printed review in my high school paper was in the fall of 1980 when I was a freshman in high school. So I've been doing this for 40 years, yeah, and holy crap, I can't believe. And I'm like, that's what this movie left me with.
Happy 100th birthday, Alonzo Duralde.
Bad Boys for Life just had me feeling like, ugh, how much of my life has been spent watching this nonsense?
I had a good time.
All right. I didn't not have a good time.
It's good and it's not.
The chasing and the shooting was fine.
Chasing and shooting.
Martin Lawrence being funny is fine. Martin Lawrence acting?
Being serious is never. You don't want him to try to emote in a serious, dramatic way. No, you don't. All right.
So speaking of things you don't want.
Doolittle.
Oh, boy.
It stars Robert Downey Jr. as the Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
It also stars Antonio Banderas as a pirate king.
With all the guyliner.
It also stars Michael Sheen as a mustache-twirling person.
Yes.
It also stars Jim Broadbent as another mustache-twirling person. And then all other famous people are animals.
Well, except for the woman from...
Jesse Buckley.
Jesse Buckley, okay. Who plays Queen Victoria.
Yeah. Emma Thompson, Rami Malek, John Cena, Kumail Nanjiani, Octavia Spencer, Tom Holland, Craig Robinson, Ralph Fiennes, Selena Gomez, Marion Cotillard. They're all wisecracking animals.
Uh-huh.
That, even though this film was set in the 19th century,
yeah,
they walk around saying things like, you go, girl! And like,
yeah.
it's
like Queen Victoria is alive, and these animals all speak fluent meme.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. You expect a cat to walk in and say, I can has cheeseburger. Like, there's not.
It is.
There's not anything that makes any sense.
Oh, no. And again, and then it's like, so I would say, and this would be forgivable if the movie were funny.
It's not funny at all.
It's not funny at all.
The gorilla does some fun shrieking that I found mildly amusing when it gets scared of whatever it's supposed to be scared of.
They never explain how the animals can speak to each other.
Yeah, that's true. They don't.
Doolittle is gifted with the ability to understand what animals
are. They show him speaking animal language and then it...
Very briefly. It sort of
morphs into English, everyone speaking.
Yeah, it's like that joke in the Mel Brooks To Be or Not To Be, where he and Anne Bancroft sing Sweet Georgia Brown in Polish, and then they have an argument in Polish, and then suddenly this voice comes out and says, attention, the rest of the film will be in English.
Right.
Yeah, this movie is a disaster.
It is an absolute mess and a disaster.
Like, yes. It is no
There's
charm.
There's a story.
No
but
laughs.
It's not important.
No.
Like, they've poisoned the Queen of England, and Dr. Doolittle has to help them by finding the antidote that's on something called the Eden Tree. And
that
it's
his
on a
wife
tropical,
died trying to find.
It's on a tropical island. And yeah, his wife died trying to find it. So he's grieving and not interested in being a part of this activity at all.
Yeah. He mumbles a lot.
He mumbles a lot in an accent that makes his voice unintelligible.
Yeah.
He is speaking with an accent that is like part Welsh, part Scottish, part Irish, maybe.
Yeah.
But when he does so, it's all... And you don't know what he's talking
and
about.
And if ever
you don't
a
know
movie
what he's saying.
Desperately needed like the twinkle of Robert Downey Jr., it's this one.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
Whatever charm he has had in other films... He has decided that it's not important here.
Yeah.
And he's a producer. Like, it's his movie.
His wife is, like, the main producer on it. Yeah, the team Downey is responsible for this movie. They got Stephen Gagan to direct it, who has clearly no affinity for the material at all. And so there was, like, tons of reshoots done with another director.
I apologize for getting anyone's hopes up on Twitter when I tweeted about the film after having seen it without saying the name of the movie, that there was a film opening this Friday in which a set of bagpipes are pulled out of a dragon's butthole.
Yes.
The scene climaxes with this gigantic dragon epic fart blast. And I think I made people excited.
Yeah.
Like, I think they thought, oh, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
Like, that's the only part of the movie where it's so scatological and rancorous that it comes alive for just a moment or two. The rest of the time, it's this lead weight.
It is charming.
It ain't cats.
Oh, hell no.
No.
It is charming for about 3 minutes because the very opening of the film is 2D animation and it's narrated by Emma Thompson.
Right.
And it's never that lovely again after it stops being that.
It is not.
Is that everything for this week?
And that's the movies for this week.
Do you have a DVD pick?
I don't.
I do.
All right.
Dr. Doolittle, 1967's musical starring Rex Harrison, which is not a particularly good movie, but boy, is it better than Doolittle.
I have an anti-DVD pick this week. It is don't watch Dr. Doolittle. Don't watch the original Dr. Doolittle. When I was a little child, when I was 5 years old, my mother took me to see the original Dr. Doolittle in the theater. Mm-hmm. I was enchanted. I even had the push-me-pull-you two-headed llama doll.
Nice.
Apparently, no one had that doll, because even the merchandising for that film failed.
Not for lack of trying.
I was so into it that I even had the doll. And then you took me to the Egyptian, or did I take you? The American Cinematheque screened it about 10 years ago.
Yeah, they were doing
it. With Samantha Eggar in attendance.
More like it's almost 20 years ago.
It might have been almost 20 years ago. And when we went back, I thought, oh, I loved that when I was 5. Let's go look at it again. And I went, and I thought, oh my God. What a monstrosity. Having said that, the original Dr. Doolittle does have the two-headed llama, and it does have him riding on a giant
pink
snail. And he does kiss a lady seal right on the seal lips.
Yes.
She's wearing a little frilly dress and a bonnet.
Yes, yes.
And he more or less makes out with her. that's weird.
There is what Disney Plus would call dated cultural content.
There sure is.
Involving the great Jeffrey Holder, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's got songs by Leslie Bricus and I don't know.
Don't forget the racism.
Yes.
Let's make sure everyone understands.
I'm being very clear
about
that.
Absolute racism.
Off camera as well, apparently, according to Mark Harris's great book, Pictures of a Revolution, which you should totally read, Rex Harrison was constantly lobbing anti-Semitic nicknames at co-star Anthony Newley. This was a movie that actually got a Best Picture nomination the year of The Graduate and Bonnie and Clyde and In the Heat of the Night.
Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of the last of the Elephantine Roadshow musicals. Now, it's not a good movie, but again, better than Doolittle.
Yeah.
We have some letters.
We do. This one's from Lauren. Your discussion of the Academy Award nominations both struck a chord with me and made me deeply sad. Not about what you said. This isn't a complaint. When I lived in Los Angeles for a few years after college, I had the opportunity to see most films when they were released, and I followed entertainment news religiously. Much like Moira Rose, my favorite season was awards. At the time, I would have agreed with the two of you that the Oscars were little more than the event at the end of the season with the fanciest dresses. Now, however, I have moved back to Tennessee, where I live in a rural town of about 5,000 people. I have to drive 40 minutes to get to a theater at all.
Wow.
And even then, I can only see the big releases. As Alonzo mentioned, streaming has helped this situation tremendously. Some of the films with the most buzz this year have been on Netflix or Amazon for a while now, so I feel relatively caught up. I'm lucky, though. A few miles down the road from me, people don't have reliable internet access.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't have streaming services at all. A significant part of our community relies on the public library and Redbox for movies, and many of those nominated won't show up there until early February, if they show up at all. Because of the awards/distribution schedule, it's hard for those of us in rural areas to see a number of the year's films before most of the awards shows. Even with streaming, my best chance at watching an awards show where I have informed opinions on movies I actually have seen is the Academy Awards. It's an event I look forward to all year, so it is incredibly disappointing that it has become something that so many people understandably write off. Maybe if I create a guild of rural cinephiles, someone will start sending me screeners. Do it!
That's a brilliant idea.
That's a very good idea. On a separate note, a while ago, Dave had mentioned that he wanted to listen to famous people talk about being famous. In case you missed it, I wanted to let you know that Chrissy Teigen did a Q&A on Twitter specifically about being famous. Oh, I missed that. How did I miss that?
I don't know how you missed that.
I follow her on Twitter.
Oh, goodness.
She took a picture of her junk drawer, explained how super famous people navigate the airport, and acknowledged her many household employees. Here's an article that collects some of her more interesting answers. Oh, there's an article. There's a link.
Ooh.
Thank you for that. Because I was about to say, if anyone's going to talk about this stuff right out loud in the open, it's Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah.
Because she does not care. Thank you for all you do. Love the podcast. Thanks, Meryl, to see the movies you discuss.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, on the episode with Manola and Robert and Peter, we talked about the importance of, you know, physical media and owning DVDs and Blu-rays because streaming, you know, things are so, you know, erratic.
Yeah.
And somebody commented about how, yeah, and also if you live in areas where it takes 4 hours to download a movie, you know, because they don't have high speed internet, then yeah, you need to have a DVD.
This is from Joe, who has included a list of films for us to knife.
Ooh, it's been a while.
It's been a while since someone has sent us a top 10 list of films for us to knife. So he says, I hope the holidays went well for both of you. As we're going into the new year, I've been reflecting a lot recently and have been drafting this letter in my head over and over for months now.
Oh my.
And I've decided to finally put it into words. It's probably going to be all over the place, so be ready. I've been listening to you guys since 2014 when I was still in high school.
Whoa.
And was still awkward about my sexuality. For the longest time, I thought I was asexual and I just wasn't going to connect to anyone. That was until I realized I was gay last year at 23 and my life completely changed. As a film enthusiast, I was already in love with your personalities and your honest, authentic discussions about a medium I adore, and how you both helped broaden and expand my tastes. If it wasn't for the time Alonzo discussed going to La La Land and At Long Last Love as a double feature, I wouldn't have discovered the treasure trove that is At Long Last Love, along with Peter Bogdanovich's work, which I've also fallen in love with. But recently I realized how important you both were in my development, in discovering my own queerness and overall identity. I know everyone says that you're like their two gay uncles, but it's true. So I write this letter as a thank you for all that you've done to help me on this journey of self-discovery and wish you both a happy 10 years.
I'm going to cry.
I'm all emotional right now.
That's really lovely.
Thank you, Joe. Now let's shred this list.
All right. What do you got?
AI, artificial intelligence. I'm a fan.
You are.
I'm a fan of that one.
I still say...
People crap on the ending, but I really love the ending.
If it had ended with him trapped under the Ferris wheel forever, that would have been a better ending for me.
No. You know what? You know how it ends? It ends with him in bed with his mother, who's not alive, and he just says, Mommy, 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 forever. That's perverted, and that's why it's fantastic.
I should probably see it again. I haven't seen it since it came out.
Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
I love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, you do.
Opening Night, John Cassavetes.
Oh, good one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
News from Home, Chantal Akerman. I haven't seen this one.
I have not seen it either.
Yeah.
Is that the one that...
So you get it. You get a benefit of the doubt on that one.
Didn't Manolo and Robert talk about that being on their like best of the decade list?
Maybe.
It was some Akerman. One of them. I thought it was that one.
Funeral Parade of Roses, which is amazing.
Yes.
One from the Heart.
Oh,
Coppola.
Well, if you like one, if you like it, Long Last Love. I mean, I guess that's of a piece.
The Last Days of Disco.
Yes.
The Young Girls of Rochefort.
Oh, yum.
Original cast album, Company.
Yes.
Wendy and Lucy.
Oh, God, yes.
Trouble Every Day. Thank you. Thank you. Joe, your list is 100% knife.
Yes.
Maybe 98%, because Alonzo's still not sold on AI.
Not entirely.
But... either way. He says, a goal of mine this year is to watch more melodramas. What are some of your favorites? Douglas Sirk. Magnificent Obsession. All That Heaven Allows.
Written on the Wind. Imitation of Life.
Yeah. That's where you begin.
Yeah. That's kind of ground zero.
Now Voyager.
Oh, yes.
What else?
Well, you know, there's a distinction of like, are we talking about melodramas or are we talking about women's pictures? Because
the overlap is pretty steep. It's pretty heavy there.
I suppose.
Steep
so.
Is the wrong word. But thank you, Joe.
Those are good places to start.
Okay. Wow. Another list to knife.
Oh.
We must have asked people to do that recently because now it's all happening.
When it rains, it pours. Yeah. Well, also, we have the end of the year and the end of the decade. So.
Cody. Mm-hmm. Dear David Alonzo, I did not think last year was a good year in film.
Well,
so instead of sending in my favorites of 2019, I thought I would send in my top 10 that I watched for the first time last year.
Oh, okay.
ABCD, Anybody Can Dance from Remo D'Souza. I haven't seen that.
Never heard of it.
I do not know that film. Bresson's Pickpocket.
Ooh.
58 Up.
56 Up.
56 Up, excuse me. The Raid 2.
Oh, it's yes. Amazing.
The Great Dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Ex Libris.
Oh.
Gaspar Noé's Love. Did you see that one?
I did. That's actually the only Noé I've seen.
So you've seen the one with the what's the right word to use? Ejaculations.
Yes.
In 3D.
Yes.
M.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
The Apology, Tiffany Seung. I don't know how to say her last name, and I have not seen this film.
I do not know that film.
Satan Tango.
No.
All right, so you get 100% knife on this list, because how many of them have we not seen? One, two. Two of them, we don't know at all.
You get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. But now I'm going to go look for them, because obviously you've got good taste.
So far as we know.
Cody just said, here are the films.
Ah.
And I believe Cody.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Cody said it. I believe it.
And that settles it. That's right.
Hey, we have a Patreon.
Sure.
I forgot to mention it on yesterday's episode, which
what do you know?
Was dumb.
Patreon.
Yeah, patreon.com/linoleumknife. We have so much extra content. We do three other shows every week for our subscribers.
And if you pay for it, you can listen to it.
Yes. LKTV, a podcast of the television, and Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and Linoleum Nights. We also have daily recommendations and monthly club meeting hangouts and all kinds of other fun stuff. So again, check out patreon.com/linoleumknife, all one word, and it'll change your life.
To some degree or another, perhaps.
Yes.
We offer no guarantees.
No.
No.
Anything else?
My voice is about to give out.
Okay, well, let me just do the spiel, and then we'll get out of here. Thank you all for listening. Please check out our friends on the internet. Go see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to on the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out Schmoes Know, Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. A couple of new podcasts I want to give a shout-out to.
Yeah.
There's one called The Big Fat Gay Podcast, which is about gay men and sort of like size issues and dealing with, you know, being
Fatness.
Being, yeah, fatness, yeah. Being larger in the world. Yeah. And they are just a few episodes in. I find the conversations really interesting and very thought-provoking. So I'm digging that show. And our friends at Deck the Hallmark have started their own network, the Bramble Jam Network. Mm-hmm. And they have a couple of other shows that you might also want to check out. One is called A History or His Story, where former history teacher Dan reads three stories from history, but you have to figure out which one of them is a lie. Mm-hmm. And a new one from Justin Kirkland, who writes for Esquire, called My Year with Dolly. And he is basically going through, she has been, you know, recording since 1967. And so he's basically doing a year by year podcast of her albums, her, you know, acting work, like whatever her, whatever each particular year was for Dolly, starting in 67, going all the way to 2019. So he's off to an interesting start, and that I think is going to be worth checking out. Subscribe to this program at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. No one's done it in a while. We would appreciate it if you would. It does help people find the show, and we'll read that 5-star review on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Spotify, TheLounge.com, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, etc. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. You can find him at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. And, of course, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com, whether it's a top 10 list or questions or comments about the show. We appreciate hearing from you. We'll be back next time. Hopefully, Dave will have more voice and less coughing. And until then... You had one line.
I know, but it's okay. Goodbye, because I'm going to start coughing. Goodbye.